Welcome back to a very special episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. It is the Draft Nerds Christmas. The Draft Nerds Christmas every single year isn't the NFL draft. You might think that it is, but if you think that, you are not a true psychopath. The real NFL draft Christmas is when Dane Brugler's beast drops independently for years and years and years. And now for The Athletic, and with The Athletic, we have a new interactive layout we're going to talk about. Insane production value from the New York Times putting this in. Fantastic stuff. I'm not going to go through this alone. We're going to talk a lot. We're going to get through a lot here. We are going to beat Dane to the ground with our opinions. Obviously, he is one of our favorites. If not our favorites, I mean, he's the reason why I do this. I think he's a very big reason why Corey does this as well. We both have, you know, somewhat relationships with him personally in some way, shape, or form. So we're going to go through this. We're not going to use kid gloves. We're going to disagree with what we disagree with. But I think overall, it just shows how different everybody is looking at this class in general. And I think how important it is, the lack of echo chamber that we have in this NFL draft class. I think it's been one of the most fun, if not the most fun times that I've had evaluating NFL talent. I'm not doing it alone. I obviously have Corey Kinnon here with me. Corey, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. I'm ready to roll. We are, by the time this episode comes out, 2 weeks on the dot from the draft. So I did realize, though, my gym does a biannual workout called a dry try, which is a dry triathlon, because I do Orange Theory. And the premise of Orange Theory is like there's rowers, there's treadmills, and there's weight floors. And that is the day of day two of the draft at 4:30. And I'm realizing I'm going to be doing it on limited sleep because I'll be working all night the night before. You know what? It doesn't matter. I'll take whatever time I get in that thing. Because the draft is almost here 2 weeks from tomorrow, and I'm ready to go. Looking forward to diving into Dane's work here again. Yeah, Dane has been a colleague of mine, which is kind of cool to call him that, over the past couple of years, where we exchange DMs and kind of cross-check each other's work sometimes. He'll be like, hey, Wayne, what do you think of this guy? Am I crazy for seeing this? And I'll kind of do the same thing. So very cool to dive into this.
This is where I'm obliged to bring up the hard-o, my aunt does Orange Theory type thing, because my aunt does Orange Theory. My aunt's also a very big health nut and kind of a psychopath when it comes to that. So
it's been revolutionary for me. I don't care what people think about it.
No. Here's the thing. Move your body and do what's best for you. Mm-hmm. Dude, I can go in and smash weights. You get me in a hot yoga class, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. Pilates, death. Every type of different movement is going to challenge you in a different way. And I think that people should do more different types of workouts. Anyways, that's beside the point. Let's get into it. The new layout. The New York Times putting some production value into this. Legacy media might be pretty much dead. Subscription-based models stink. I actually don't mind them because I don't mind paying for premium content, but the masses don't like them. And our way of living is very clearly dying when it comes to this industry. It's amazing to see a massive project like this in an incredibly niche market to flourish year in and year out. The hype is real with it. I love the beast, and I love what Dane does for it and for the draft.
It's amazing. You know, I don't know what else to say about it. I'm going to push back on your the subscription-based thing is dying. I feel like Substack is really blooming right now.
No, not the subscription-based thing is dying. Regular legacy media is dying. Yeah. Look at every single one of the 33rd team. PFN's gone through layoffs. We've seen all of the layoffs of real journalism in the big networks as well. Like, you have some of Mina Kimes, and obviously some of the really good ones are still there. But we have devolved in our content. And I think a lot of it has to do with independent people doing YouTube and people getting their content in that way instead of going and reading on EFN or reading ESPN articles or things of that nature. Everybody is getting their content through individual content creators at this point. And that's why things like Substack and things like Patreon are popping off, YouTube popping off, whereas legacy media is death.
You can either pay for the people you want to read, or you could get viruses from ads after ads after ads.
Yeah, exactly.
It's up to you.
Yep, we are getting into QB talk right now because we are 6 minutes in,
and we haven't talked about a single thing about the.
No, we haven't. Do you just want to go through the general rankings here? Listen, we absolutely have some gripes here, right? And we have some things that aren't surprising. The top, I think at this point, the top two are not surprising. And all of the talk surrounding Jackson Dart and Tyler Show and Jalen Milroe, like having those three guys kind of sandwiched around one another, not surprising. The round grades of second round, third round, two threes for those guys, it's too high for me. But quarterback tax and all that, I don't care. And I don't know how Dane does his board when it comes to like having a numerical value for these guys, or if it's just like, yeah, pay the quarterback tax and that's how I'm going to throw it on my board as well. But Quinn Ewers at QB6, we have to talk about the round three grade. We have to talk about it. Diplomatically,
Quinn Ewers is one of the worst quarterbacks I've ever evaluated. My
thing is, and I've brought this up before on this podcast, he kind of talked about like the poise of him and dealing with the pressure. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't think he does that well. Mm-mm. And he's talked about the arm, and the arm's not there anymore. Mm-mm. The arm might have been there a couple of years ago, but that dude has gone through injuries, and that dude does not have the same juice that he did. And he's not a great athlete. Like, for me, I fail to see the projection to an NFL player at all with him.
I agree.
I don't
see the accuracy is not even there. Like, sometimes you can fall back on anticipation and accuracy, and that's not the thing with Ewers. Like, Ewers has the lowest weighted on target percentage of any quarterback that I've charted, other than Will Levis. I'm sorry. Yeah. Will Levis has a lower one.
We're talking about Dylan Gabriel at 5'11", 205 pounds after eating 37 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and liking him significantly more.
Yep.
With no arm strength.
Yeah.
Than Quinn Ewers. And like, it's not even close who I would rather draft. It's not even close who I would rather draft between him and Riley Leonard or Will Howard or Kyle McCord. Like, those guys I'm taking 100 times out of 100 before I am taking Quinn Ewers. Max Brosmer, all of these guys.
Yeah. I would probably, him and Curtis Rourke, I'd probably put in the same tiers, just because I don't think Rourke's arm is there. And I know he's playing through like a torn ACL, so maybe his ability to draw power through his hips was a little bit deteriorated there this year. But like, I don't see a big arm, and he's pretty immobile. So like, I'd probably put him above Curtis Rourke. That's about it.
No. Me personally, no.
Yeah, well, there you go. But that's where I'm at with it. Third is steep. Like, if we're talking day two quarterbacks, the reason we take day two quarterbacks is because there's some sort of tool that you can take a chance at developing.
You gamble on them, or they're a high-end backup.
There isn't that. with yours. So I really struggle to see that one.
For me, he discusses it incredibly well when he talks about Will Howard. Will Howard, not a starter, but that's a dude who checks every box.
It's Mason Rudolph. It's Mason Rudolph.
Yeah. Yeah. More athletic than Mason Rudolph. A little bit. Yeah. We don't have anything to talk about with running backs, so we're going to just move on. We talk about running backs a ton anyways, and there wasn't anything crazy. Wide receivers. We just generally liked his rankings. Both of us liked his rankings for wide receiver.
Big fan of the Jalen Noel wide receiver 5. Love Jalen Noel. Yeah. The one gripe I would have with wide receiver, and we mentioned this on the last podcast. I'm pretty sure it was the last podcast, or maybe it was the one where we built wide receivers, but Ty Felton, I think, continues to be the most underrated wide receiver and overlooked wide receiver in this draft class. And Dane has him at wide receiver 19, below Chimere DK, Keandre Lambert Smith, Tez Johnson, 5'9", 5'4", 5'5", Tez Johnson. Like, so I do think that Ty Felton is continuously. I get that he has some drop issues, but like, I think he wins on the vertical plane. Really,
197,000 targets.
Yes. So like, I'm okay with it. So I do think I'd have Ty Felton a good bit higher. But outside of that, man, like, he's got guys like Alec Iemanar, like, exactly where I would have Alec Iemanar. Like, Isaiah Bond, pretty much exactly where I'd have Isaiah Bond. Savion Williams, exactly where I'd have Savion Williams. So, like, hard to argue with a lot going on here in terms of his wide receiver rankings.
Let's take a freaking bow for the tight end rankings. Just fantastic stuff overall. Tyler Warren being as high as he was, perfect. Colson Loveland continues to confound me, just like in general, because I just wonder what his skill set, or how his skill set in a league that has consistently rewarded speed and the ability to separate. Like, I know that tight end is, and his body style is a little bit different, and we've seen the move tight end, the big wide receiver, work. I think it takes a special offense to do it. And for me, when it comes to ranking guys, there has to be a universal nature to their being on the field. And for me to feel comfortable with like a top 20 grade
on an F.
I just don't see, I don't see like an F being that universal.
Yeah. I mean, it's the Evan Engram thing. I mean, Evan Engram, obviously smaller and more dynamic.
But that's the thing. He's like, more dynamic.
Yeah. Yep. I tend to agree. I know a lot of guys that like Underdog, and there's been some push, and like, I know John Ledyard pushed back on like Loveland's ability to block too. There are some guys out there who really believe that Loveland does have some upside as a blocker. Not necessarily something I see or something that he's ever really asked to do at Michigan a whole lot.
He was asked a lot more as a freshman and as a sophomore as a blocker. But they had wide receivers. So like this year he lined up at X a lot.
Yeah.
He lined up in the slot a lot. Like, he wasn't used. They used like number 46 or whatever the hell is it? like a straight up neck roll tight end as a blocking tight end this year. So, but yeah, I mean, I think when you look at that, he's that kind of overall weapon, almost 33-inch arms as well, probably over 33-inch arms if it wasn't for just like the NFL combine being weird with that.
But. Yeah. I was going to say that, like, I think that like you put Mason Taylor in Michigan and you put Colson Loveland at LSU, and they play the exact same roles that each of those guys played. Like, I think if we're talking about Colson Loveland at LSU, we're talking about him the same way we talk about Mason Taylor. We're like, oh no, he does have some inline ability and there is some blocking upside. And we're talking about Mason Taylor's like, oh, this guy can't block. This guy's exclusively a big slot F, you know, like
usage is a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But so maybe that's me doing a little self-reflection and evaluating Loveland as like his potential as an inline guy a little bit too harsh.
Yeah.
Whereas like Elijah Arroyo, I think that guy's strictly an F. Like, strictly an F. That guy's not playing in line.
Well, you say that, but he's got the size for it.
He does.
And that's all that matters to coaches. Mm-hmm. I will teach him how to block, because at the end of the day, he's got an 82-inch wingspan. He's 255. And he's got huge hands. Like, they're going to be like, yeah, it's time. we can teach him how to block. Terrence Ferguson at tight end 5, Fannin at tight end 6. Like, all of this looks incredibly right for me.
I think Ferguson is still a little high.
Who?
Ferguson. I just don't see the testing translate to tape, and that's
the 2-3. Yeah, the 2-3 thing in the round range, the round 3 range for Fannin, Gunnar Helm 3-4. Like, Gunnar Helm, great football player, tested incredibly poorly. Sure, round 4, that's perfect for him. Gadsden as like a little gadget weapon, round 4, him. Sure. Mitchell Evans as a you know, kind of your prototypical tight end too. Brennan Stuhl, same thing. Like, you have your blocking tight ends a little bit later. Dupree is right there at 12. Fedone and Haas, I'd probably have switched, but like, they're number 13 and 14, and they have the same round grade. It doesn't freaking matter. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
his tight end rankings for me are infallible pretty much.
Yeah, I agree. I'd probably have Joshua Simon a little bit higher just because I think he's a little bit better. Like, I'm going to value guys who are better with the football in their hands than blocking tight ends like Haas, Dupree, Matavau.
Yeah, I'm not.
I really like that's fine.
I'm not, because if you don't think there's going to be like a starter, it doesn't matter, because if you're a tight end 2 or a tight end 3, your ass better block.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's fair, but because, like, honestly, outside of the top 64, like, draft role player, you're drafting role players, so, like, all of this is interchangeable. If a team wants a late round H-back, they're going to take Joshua Simon. If a team wants a late round blocking tight end, they're going to take Jackson Haas.
Yeah, and if you want a guy who can, if you want a guy who can catch the football, you're going to draft a wide receiver.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because only those guys at the very top are dynamic enough to actually matter as pass catchers. So. Offensive line talk again, like, not a lot for us to talk about. The one big thing we need to talk about are two big things. Mm-hmm. Donovan Jackson, OT6 at number 48 overall, and Kelvin Banks, OG2 at number 26 overall. Mm-hmm. I love that Dane is sticking to his guns here on Banks being a guard. Love that he is doing that. Mm-hmm. Is his eye, kind of like you, both Ohio boys, in different ways, are his eyes on that organization and on Donovan Jackson over the last 4 years swaying his opinion on what we saw late in the year, or overpowering what he saw late in the year for Donovan Jackson to not come off this, like, kind of developmental track with Jackson a little bit? Because I was on the developmental side of things with him for a very long time. Like, he needed to clean things up, and it wasn't really there. And I've talked about, like, some of the not using his hands as much as he should when he's on the move, for his athleticism. But what we saw at the end of the year was pretty special. And switching him over to tackle from guard in his rankings shows that he saw that. But yeah. Is he allowing the mountainous body of evidence that he saw, because he has such a close eye on Ohio State in general, to cloud his judgment a little bit when it comes to Jackson? Or is it just one of those things where he might just not see it with him overall?
Probably the latter. In my opinion, Jackson's a better football player than Kelvin Banks.
I think
you think so too. I don't care tackle guard. I do agree that Jackson's a tackle and Banks is a guard. I'm 100% on board with that. But if we're talking about Jackson as, like, some other tape hindering that, then, like, why aren't we doing that with Josh Connerly? And why aren't we doing that with Josh Simmons, who I thought their 2023 tape was like, and obviously those two have, like, a ton of athletic upside as well. But I still don't think Connerly is 100% there with his hands or his core strength or things like that, where I think Donovan Jackson's ahead of him. So are we really valuing Connerly being a full calendar year younger than Donovan Jackson enough to, like, is that why we're doing this? Because, I mean, Connerly's an inch taller. Arm length, Donovan Jackson has longer arms, a longer wingspan. So, like, and I don't think, I mean, athletically, Connerly's up there, and he's a former 5-star, obviously. But, like, and Donovan Jackson, didn't test fully. So, like, you know, maybe that plays into it a little bit of, like, athletic upside multiplier. Perhaps that plays into it. I know Donovan Jackson did a few things at his pro day. I want to see what percentiles he kind of fell into. What are we doing? Donovan Jackson has a 96th percentile vertical jump and an 82nd percentile broad jump. Plenty explosive.
I have a little mea culpa. I just brought up real quick when you asked who I have as the higher ranked player. I actually do have Banks ranked as the higher ranked player. Mm-hmm. I have him ranked as a tackle, and I have Jackson ranked as a guard still. But I wouldn't mind anybody who drafted Banks as a guard over Jackson or Jackson as a tackle over Banks. Like, I think that they are much closer than 22 players apart. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
And depending on your offense and what you want out of your tackle or guard, mm-hmm. I think that's how you pick them personally, schematically. We got to get moving here because we're at 21 minutes.
Yeah.
But we got to talk about the edge class because we might be here for a bit.
Yeah, we might be.
Jalen Walker, he has been steadfast all year. Loves him. I think a lot of the Jalen Walker love comes from him being quite possibly one of the most lovable personalities and workers that I can remember. Talking about when we talk about the NFL draft, I'm hearing more and more about the potential of him going to New England at number 4 when they need an offensive tackle. And there's 2 offensive tackles in this class that I think warrant that selection more than Jalen Walker does, period, as a talent.
Mm-hmm.
The player that he is on the field is confounding, but you love the player, you love the person. And so you think no matter what, he's going to work out, because this is also a guy who was put me on freaking special teams. Our kick coverage is not good enough, Kirby. Put me on special teams. That's the type of guy that he is. And so the Patriot way? Yeah. This is the dude who fits that. Having him, for me, there's nothing that he does at edge.
I agree.
Or at linebacker.
I've tried to see it. I've rewatched it a million times at edge, and it's dude, I find a high quality pass rush rep of him beating an offensive tackle for a sack, and they're all 4 seconds into the play, or Quinn Ewers not stepping up in the pocket, and Kelvin Banks is dude, you're 7 yards deep. What do you want me to do? Or triggering from a spy look. Those are where his sacks are coming from. That's where his production's coming from. And so I've tried with Jalen Walker. I've tried it so much,
mm-hmm. But we have more to talk about. We might have to do an entire episode on Shamar Stewart at this point.
Yeah,
my Discord talked about him for 12 hours yesterday. He is the most divisive player in this class. There is everything from, I think my Discord's a little bit lower on him in general. It's mid to late first round pick. This is a day 3 guy on tape who is an athletic freak. That's how polarizing he is. Mm-hmm. And you got to understand, the more casual fan is going to look at stats and advanced metrics. And a lot of those guys might not necessarily understand the deployment of a player like that. Mm-hmm. And then you have YouTube videos coming out of this is every rep of him against Will Campbell. Let's say this is Brett's video, and I'm not saying anything about Brett's commentary, but Brett's video of every true pass set in there, it might be a true pass set, but do you know if he's actually pass rushing or is he in contain?
Right.
Is he actually pinning his ears back? What does he have as a pass rusher? What is his deployment? How is it different from other places? Because when we look at this, a lot of these SEC schools, Alabama and Georgia specifically, and now Texas A&M, these guys aren't always asked to pin their ears back. They're asked to contain these quarterbacks. They're asked to run through the chest. So we have to understand that. But him sticking to his guns, having him as high as number 9 and betting on those tools, it obviously makes us feel better. Because we have him very high.
As someone who has number 10 on my board, yes.
But at number 10, we have Mike Green, number 10 overall. We think he's a DPR. He's a DPR with off the field questions.
Yeah.
Number 10 overall. And listen, going down a little bit further here. I mean, do you have any other gripes on any of the edge rushers between like him and Ezeraquu?
I think Michael Williams is placed too high. Appropriately. Yeah. Like, I don't think he's a early first round guy the way a lot of people.
Honestly, I don't think anybody's there with him at this point.
I don't think so, which is great. I think Ezeraquu is a little bit high. Just because, like, you mentioned the pass rush plan, but the testing numbers there and the production's there, so, like, people are going to fall for it.
Yeah, and the production against the run is there as well. I don't think he's a dependable run defender, but he is a disruptive run defender, and the numbers back that up.
Yeah.
JT2MLL is way too high. But again, this is something Dane has been steadfast on. For years.
Yeah.
For years he's been like that with JTT. I love his Landon Jackson love personally. I know a lot of people, even people on this podcast, don't love him. But we have to have a conversation about Jordan. And we've had this conversation about Jordan Burch and Nick Scorton. I don't see anything with Jordan. It's not that I just don't see it with Jordan Burch being this high or being over Nick Scorton. I don't see it with Jordan Burch at freaking all.
I agree.
And what the hell does he bring more than Scorton does? Besides being 280 compared to 260 and being like a legit 280, not a fat 280.
Yeah. And I know age doesn't matter much outside of like the top 15, but like Jordan Burch is 23 and a half and Nick Scorton's 20. Like, Nick Scorton was asked to put 20 pounds on this past year. Like, we need to consider some of these things that, like, same with Shamar Stewart. Like, neither of those edge rushers produced. Yeah. We talk about that from a defensive scheme perspective and like what those guys are asked to do. Like, what happens if Scorton plays at 257, which is what he weighed in at the combine to get?
What happens if Scorton plays at Purdue again?
Exactly. Yeah. I do think that Scorton probably misplayed this offseason. Like, you weren't good enough to go into dropping out of the Senior Bowl and not testing at all this offseason. Sure. I don't think you were good enough to do that. But
yeah.
We came into the season talking about this guy's edge one at 19 years old, and now we're talking about him as edge 12.
Well, he probably didn't test because he was in a flipping 1,000 calorie deficit to get the 257.
That would beg what he plays at, but even if he plays at 270, that's still like, I play 270 with him. Like, that'd be a great play weight, I think.
Yeah. We'll have to see what he was playing at. Maybe 260, 265 for him is probably more natural. But I love the Oladeju ranking. I love Ashton Gillette being so high. I think that he is a little bit weird as a mover, but I think he's a really good football player. I think he's got really good bend for 265, and he's sawed off at 6'3". And so I like that ranking a little bit, but that's all I got for edges.
I like the Braden Swinson ranking top 100 too.
Yeah.
Swinson guy.
D tackle talk. Go off on CJ West real quick and then we can get to the rest.
Dude, what am I missing that I think this guy is a top 100 player? He's got great tape. He tested off the charts in Indianapolis. Like, what box does he need to check at this point? And I'm reading names like Ty Robinson, Jay Toya, Cam Jackson, Deion Walker, Vernon Broughton. You could get me there with Jamari Caldwell. You could get me there with an IS Peebles. You could get me there with Jordan Phillips, Omar Norman Lott. Like, those are guys that you see, I can say, like, okay, I get it. I get putting those guys over CJ West. But like, to me, this is a top 115 player in this class. DT 21 on Dane's board, and the tape's been there.
A lot of good DTs. A lot of good DTs, but
right. But like Ty Robinson at DT 12. Like, I understand that he tested off the charts, man. But like, his tape is bad. Like, in my opinion, I think his tape is bad. I'm fine with Ty Hamilton because I do like his tape quite a bit, and he tested well.
But like CJ West at 3:15 ran a sub 5.
Yes. And his tape is good. It's really good. And it's been good since he played at Kent State. So like,
yeah. All right. Ugh. Yeah. The Derek Harmon love
it.
Bravo. Love it. Kenneth Grant, Walter Nolan, Tyler Smith, the order is messed up. But I understand those rankings. I don't agree with them. I don't love Grant or Nolan that much, but I think a lot of people like Nolan even more than Dane does. So yeah, it's not a surprise. The Darius Alexander love. Darius Alexander's freaking awesome. Mm-hmm. Freaking awesome. Alfred Collins, freaking awesome. Jamar Turner is a name everybody has forgotten about. Nobody talks
second
about
round him. Grade.
Second round grade here. I'm right there with Dane. I think that he is a penetrating three tech who can move outside and play defensive end in base as well. Like, and he's obviously shown that he can do. He literally played that position before Nick Scorton came to Texas A&M as well a little bit. So he's somebody who can move all up and down the defensive line. He's also got 33 5/8-inch arms at the combine, which means they could probably be over 34 inches IRL, and an 80+ inch wingspan. Like, Jamar Turner has it. He has what you, the goods. He has what you need. And so for me, like, I was very impressed with Harmon being so high, Turner, Alexander, Collins being right where I think that they should be. And then the kind of bracketing of the athletic guys who have decent tape but need to put it all together with Lott and Phillips. Walker, even to an extent, because I know we don't know what to do with him. And he is big and just stands there a lot. But he also, at 340 pounds, is a dangerous pass rusher. When he pins his ears back, he is a disruptive player for 340. And as a rotational guy in round three or round four, who you hope can develop into a legitimate one technique, if you just tell him to play half of the snaps that he played and play at two thirds of the height that he plays at, I think that that can work. And then even guys like West and Pegasus and Riley Mills, like, I think they're all in the right area. But having some of those guys above West, I agree with you, is a little bit too much.
I'd probably have West in that 3-4 range with Jackson, Norman, Lott, Phillips, Peoples, Colt.
Yeah, and those other guys lower.
Yeah.
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 Defensive back talk.
Not a lot here.
I think that is pretty right overall.
Savon Revel at 62, based off of, he was in Dane's, I think, top 15. Preseason.
So that's what's weird for me.
And didn't play. I mean, and what he did play this year is good. And then he got
hurt. What's weird for me is,
yeah,
I thought, like, I didn't love his tape. Like, 60 right there at 60 for me is fine. Based on his tape from 2023 and based off of even the tape that I saw this year, because for me, he was still the same player. I think that he's still a little bit more niche. But I don't know how he drops so far, because I don't think an ACL injury that early in the year bothers me literally at all.
No.
So a little bit weird for me.
And literally the last game he played, he tracked a crosser all the way across the field, picked the ball off and took it back to the house. Like,
mm-hmm.
Not an easy play for a corner to make. So that I do feel like there's a bit of disconnect there, but like overall, like I think Benjamin Morrison appropriately placed. I'd probably have Jacob Parrish a little bit higher than 9 in a second, third round grade, but I guess that's okay for a guy who's probably going to play nickel.
Discord loves Benjamin Morrison. I love him too. But the multiple hip injuries as a corner.
For a guy who I thought was already pretty tight to run, like turn and run.
CB10, that's your opinion, man. I disagree with it. I think that at 6 foot tall, he is long-legged, weirdly. But I think he's pretty smooth. Corner 10 in this class, and a 2-3 on him is fine for me. The Trey Amos, Azaria Thomas thing, I know where you're at with it. I look at those guys very similarly, personally. If I was going to bet on one of those guys, I would bet on the guy who I think is a better athlete.
Amos.
At corner, that's what I'm going to do. And so I'm going to bet on Amos. And I know people love Thomas at the line of scrimmage. It's why you love him so much. Everything that happens after that scares the crap out of me. And the lack of the deployment, the way that he was deployed at Florida State, it scares the crap out of me because it's going to be something that will be very scheme dependent. One other thing I love and wanted to bring up is his Darian Porter ranking. Perfect.
Yes. Yes. Darian Porter is, I don't care what his testing number said, dude. Like, a six-year senior who's still a rotational player, and when he's on the field, he wasn't. Great special teamer. He's going to be an ace gunner. That's the place for Darian Porter.
I agree. A little too low on Ransall for me, but Ransall is like a corner safety hybrid, in my opinion. I actually think he's a safety. I think he's like a nickel, a straight-up nickel, because that dude is a dog against the run. And speaking of safeties, let's get to safeties, because Nicky Minwari, the safety one, let's go. The hype is finally there.
So where were they at on the big board? I think it was like 17 and 19, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it's close.
I think it's low. Fine. I'd probably have them both higher, but yeah. We've seen some people. I've seen some takes like Nick Minwari's tape isn't that good, and he's a combine hero, like a gym class hero. And I was like, what?
I think people. I've talked about this before. People don't understand safety play. Like, people are still talking about him being just strictly a box safety and not understanding his role at South Carolina or understanding safety play in general. And he might be better around the line of scrimmage. I don't think so. I literally think that's a dude who, outside of just purely single high, because we haven't seen it, I think that he is the perfect modern split safety who you can do anything that you want with. And so for me, he's that top guy. I absolutely adore his play. Xavier Watts, safety three, obviously. Top 50 pick, obviously, for me.
I do love the top 100 grade on Jonas Sanker.
I know you do. Billy Bowman, we're not going to talk about it. I'm just going to be wrong with Billy Bowman. I know everybody else loves him. Give me all of the Malachi Moore hype in round four. I think that's the perfect like rotational safety. And this class isn't great, but like you also, in my opinion, still have guys like, in my opinion, Trader and Waller and Castro. Dan Jackson's a guy who I actually really enjoyed his tape from the Senior Bowl. And when I went back and I watched it as a Robin to Malachi Stark's Batman, I liked him as well. Outside of those guys, like, all right, whatever. Safety. There aren't that many of them. I know you didn't like Jalen Reed, but there's just not that many safety. Makuba low, but again, you see, he's been steadfast with Makuba the entire cycle.
People
coming in, like, he said Makuba was a PFA. Years prior, people were talking about Makuba being a first round pick. The opinions on Makuba are all over the place.
There are some people that like people that I respect their tape knowledge, like Theo Ash and Vaca
Lombardi is a Cowboys guy
Makuba
with a huge
tolerance. Best safety in the class.
Yes,
I don't see it that way. I think. Probably a little bit too low. I probably have him safety five, maybe safety four, Winston him in the same range. But like, I don't think putting him in the third, fourth range is, I have a third round grade on him. Like, I don't think it's.
Yeah. He's safety four low for me. If you don't count his teammate as a safety. And if you count his teammate as a safety, he's a five for me.
I think it's very appropriate. Five, yeah. I think it's very appropriate. Yeah.
Yeah. But
do overall, we get into the specialists?
No. I will never talk about specialists. I don't have to. That's all I got. We're 40 minutes in. Let's get the heck out of here.
I love it. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll figure something out. We haven't talked about it yet. We'll figure it out.
No, we are going to figure. We're going to the defensive Frankensteins.
Oh, yeah.
Edge rushers.
Yeah. Let's build some monsters.
Listen, guys, I love you. I love Dane's beast. Have a good day. Goodbye.